Welcome to the only cricket podcast that thinks the ICC should ban declarations. Of course, you're listening to Sticky Wicket. It's been a stellar week for Test match cricket from India to South Africa to the Caribbean. Test match cricket is proving its worth. But it's not just Test match cricket that's been played. The Abu Dhabi T10 kicked off last week, as well as the culmination of the Big Bash. And to talk to me about it is Dom. How are you, mate?
I'm great, mate. I'm going to be honest, a bit tired. Stayed up to watch the Super Bowl. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, obviously enjoyed the last week of Test match cricket. Let's start with the elephant in the room. We've promised an interview with Lauren Winfield, England women's cricketer, on our Instagram earlier this week. But due to corona and quarantine changes, it's not been able to happen so far. So thank you guys for your patience. Hopefully we're rescheduling for later on this week or next week, and we'll get out to you guys as soon as we can. On a more positive note, however, slightly more positive, England beat India in Chennai for the first time in 36 years. It must be emphasised how well the whole team played against India. But to start on day one, where Joe Root, on his 100th test appearance, hit a magnificent, stubborn innings of 218, becoming the first batsman ever to score a double century on his 100th test match. But he wasn't alone with his batting success, with Sibley Stokes both having belligerent periods at the crease. Dom, how good were England's day one and day two batting?
Magnificent. It's just what England asked for. A few years ago, we were being skittled out everywhere across the globe for 244, it seems like, every innings. Now we've got real stiffness in the team. True grit, it feels like. And I think Chris Silverwood has really implemented that belligerence at the crease. And if you look at Root, he's staying for long times. If you look at Sibley, the Vicar of Sibley, we called him on Twitter, he hit 87 off 286 balls. It was nearly double the amount of balls Root had when he was on 87 as well. It was incredible. And it's just what England were looking for under Bayliss, I thought. Just that ability to stay at least for long periods of time, just make it difficult for India's bowlers, make it difficult for them to bowl at us. And Sibley didn't get the 100, but his effort was worthy of a ton. Let's talk about Root, really, surpassing Sir Vivian Richards. Like, imagine passing Sir Vivian Richards in batting. How good must you be at batting to surpass him in runs? And he's got three centuries or more in a row, and it's just a masterclass of how to play on foreign soil. Root is in a real rich vein of form. How he went a whole year without scoring 100 seems obscene to us now. But yeah, it's magnificent. And Stokes in the first inning as well. He's got a lot of criticism recently about how he can sometimes only do smash and grab innings. But whew, this was perfect. This was almost the start of his Headingley test match. It was real. Block, 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 knockable for a single. Block, 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 knockable for a single. It was perfectly timed, and it shows his depth of batting, because he can also bat on foreign surfaces that are difficult to bat on, but he can also tick runs over and stay in for long periods of time. And it must be said, the tail wagged magnificently, getting us up to that really good high first inning score, something England have really worked hard on recently. And Don Best, fair play to you, kept the tail wagging and just what we wanted, all over belting.
Yeah, it was a really mature innings from Sibley, I'd say there, as you've mentioned. I think just for him just to stay and to keep with Joe Root is just an impressive thing, because I know there was a lot of talk in Sri Lanka, and particularly in the first sort of three innings he had there, Dick Weller asking him about, is he going to be opening the batting in India? And Sibley said, very honestly, I'm not sure, I've not had a very good series so far. So it was great to see him score some runs, and hopefully he'll keep going. On a sort of slightly different thing, I think I tweeted out about Rory Burns, Dom, about how he, in the first innings, got 33, which is pretty much bang on his average. And it was, I think, the first time in about 10 innings that we'd passed 50 as an opening partnership. And I'd say, do you think it's his job to, obviously he needs to score as many runs as he can, but would you be happy enough with him averaging sort of 33, 34 in and around, and him and Sibley sort of just slowly grinding just for our middle order to have time and have the old ball to face when they come in.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you look at the performance of Rory Burns over the past few years, he scored runs regularly. And there was a period where England, I think in 2015, 2016, you could almost, as if by magic, we'd always be 33 for three at every inning. So to get to 50 for no wicket is fantastic. And it shows how far England have developed under Root's captaincy. And it's really good to see that he's maybe not getting hundreds all the time, and it's very hard to expect hundreds from every innings. But if you get 33 and that be your average as an opener, it's always going to be difficult to get big runs. So I'm fine with that. And there's no one really challenging him, I think, for his consistency outside of the team. Sorry. And I think he should stay in the side. And 33 is a good innings, as it allowed Root to not face the new ball. But it takes tough work to dig in and score 33 runs on that surface with a brand new ball.
Yeah, and so on to the onto India's first innings of batting. Best bowled fantastically, I'd say. He ripped through the Indians. He got four wickets. It was fantastic. But let's not forget Pant's exciting 91 and Washington Sundar's slow 85, which I think a lot of people may have forgotten about, which gave India a bit of a platform to stay in the game. But Dom, how did you think England's bowling performance was?
Yeah, it's been real chalk and cheese from their time in Sri Lanka. I think, let's just talk about best here. He's taken some really high-class wickets. Pujara, Kohli, Rahane and Pant, all in the first innings. Fantastic. And we were critical of his performance in Sri Lanka, and we were critical to Leach as well. We were a bit worried about how they'd attack this tournament, but they really went for it. Best played so well, so well. And just to see every wicket he took, he looked like he loved it. And I can't emphasise that enough, how important that is to see from a spin bowler. Because some spin bowlers just look like they're just turning up for the hell of it. But Best was bowling fantastically, so fair play to him. Just moving on to the fast bowlers, Archer took both openers out, and that's a real statement. Archer's first test match abroad in foreign surfaces, and to get both openers led the way for Best to take that middle order and rip their heart out, really. Leach and Anderson mopped up the tail. And I do feel sorry for Leach, because whilst we'll talk about his excellence in the fourth innings, Leach was unlucky. He was just attacked by Pant, and fair play to Pant. And it's a magnificent innings by Pant to get 91 and hard luck not getting 100. But he really kept India alive. And I just feel sorry for Leachy, because he was just against a really good batsman. So India scored 337 on a surface that almost deserved more respect to the English bowlers, and it cost the Indians. England had a big lead in the first inning, so England quickly pumped up a score of 178, giving India a target of 420. A lot of people questioned Joe Root's decision to not declare, Michael Vaughan being the most vocal about that. What were your thoughts on that, Toby, and the non-declaration?
I wasn't too sure. I see the points on both sides of the argument. I think Cook was probably the biggest advocate of Root not declaring, which makes sense for the way that Cook captain's always quite restrained in his declarations. But I think Vaughan was quite harsh, and I think the way that India played in Australia really would have played on Root's mind, the way that they managed to chase down at the Gabba such a high score, with Rishabh Pant being such a dangerous player, as well as the other middle order Indians, and Kohli coming back, who wasn't even playing in the final three matches in Australia. I think the bit that perhaps not frustrates me but intrigues me was the way that England went from, with Root and Stokes at the crease being very aggressive, Root had a huge strike rate for his 40 runs he scored, which we wouldn't necessarily expect from Root in Test match cricket, and that was good to see, actually, that him and Pope as well being quite aggressive, all with strike rates over 50. And then Butler and Best sort of batted together, both with strike rates significantly lower, both in the sort of 30s at one point, before Butler did begin to expand again just before he got out, hitting a few boundaries. And then it was yet again at the end, Jack Leach scored 14 off 57 at a strike rate of 24, and Jimmy 1 off 12 at a strike rate of 8, which seems weirdly low when it seemed like England were trying to progress the game forwards. But then it worked out well, I'd say, for England. I wouldn't have liked to see them declare much earlier with a score below 400. So I think 420 was a reasonable target to set, Dom. What did you think?
I thought it was perfect. I thought they timed the standard and scale of their innings perfectly to allow just one or two overs at the end of the day. But I do get why people were critical, and a declaration is very difficult to get right. So fair play for Root being more conservative, and that conservatism helped England get to a good score, and it worked perfectly in the end, didn't it? So it's all gone well for England in this Test match. And whilst you could argue, what if something doesn't go right, what would happen then? I thought in the circumstances, Don Bess's sort of knocking it around, allowing the tail to not wag as fervently as it did in the first innings, but to get those extra 70 runs was very important for England, and it made the total almost inaccessible for India.
It would have been hard to see India chase down 420 in a day without someone like Rishabh Pant scoring a double 100, I'd say. Yeah. And probably off about 100 balls the way that he likes to bat. On to day five. At the end of day four, actually, Leach bowled a fantastic ball to get Rohit Sharma out, which is an absolute beauty. Textbook left-arm orthodox bowler. And then day five, England sort of just kept chipping away at India. Only really Virat Kohli scored runs. He got 67, no, 72, sorry, and 50 from Shubman Gill. But after that, no one really scored runs. They had ducks from Rahane, Washington Sundar and Nadeem. So not as much of a tail wag there, you could say. Dom, how good was Jimmy Anderson? He took 3 wickets for 18 runs on that final day and just helped England significantly with some absolute peaches.
Yeah, it proves he is the greatest of all time when it comes to fast bowling. He can do it on any surface it feels like. Offer him a swamp and he'll get the ball moving. Beautiful wickets, it must be said. When I watched it, it reminded me of that Flintoff over from 2005. Just his mastery of the ball was just magnificent. And magnificent is the right word there. It was glorious to watch. It's high, high standard cricket. Probably the best mover of a ball is Jimmy Anderson at the moment. And fair play to him being 38, 37. I can't put an age on him. He's almost ancient in cricketing terms, yet he is still performing at the highest level. And we're so lucky to watch him. So lucky to watch him. Eleanor Oldroyd put out that we'll be telling our grandkids about him. And that's so true. So we've only got a few years left of Jimmy Anderson. So let's just enjoy it. His 3 for 18 allowed England to put the pressure on the middle order, and it really stopped the game. After his 2-wicket over, it was 92 for 4. India and a hell of a lot of trouble there, and it just proves that, you know, let's be honest, Jimmy Anderson is the best. You mentioned Leachie's beautiful wicket of Rohit Sharma, just the turn of the ball. And Toby, I'd like to hear your opinion, as you are the spin guru here. Your opinions on the spin twins in this game.
I think if I'm the spin guru, then I'm not sure either of us can bowl much off spin or leg spin here. I thought it was an interesting performance from them. I'd say Leachie in that second innings did look fantastic. The wickets he took were phenomenal, but he got pretty much, I think, exactly the same figures as Don Best. They both bowled the same number of overs, same number of wickets for the same number of runs, in Best in the first, Leachie in the second innings. Both taking 4 fours, which is good to see again. Yeah, I don't think Best really got the praise that Leach ended up getting, which seems a bit unfortunate for him, because he doesn't necessarily bowl as tight as Leach, or as beautifully, almost you could say, as Leach. But he does seem to have just as good a result. When you look at their averages, they're pretty much identical. I think Leach averages slightly lower with the ball. He averages 30.46 for in Test cricket, and Don Best 32, which is pretty much the same. But actually, Don Best's economy rate, 2.88, is very slightly lower than Leach's 3, which yet again you wouldn't necessarily expect from them. But I think in general they both bowled pretty well in the Test match. They both took wickets, which is all you can really ask from them, and they took wickets of great players, with Best taking Virat Kohli with what seemed like, from an outsider's point of view, like a fantastic plan that worked out well. Dom, do you think it was the same? How did you see them bowl?
Yeah, well, if you're the spin guru, I'm not the I don't know much what's been bowling, but from what I understand is they were magnificent and they did the job so well. And you can't fault these lads who have really been through a lot of criticism from us, from probably higher members of the media. I'm not too sure they were worried about what we thought of them, but they played so well. And Leach and Best, fair play to you. You've got three more games to prove your worth in almost your heaven of pitches. So just prove what you can in front of the entire world, and especially the entire world, as for the first time, as we talked about last week, it was on Channel 4. It got people watching. I know it's to grow to interest in cricket online. Much more people were talking about it. Toby, what were your thoughts on Channel 4? I thought it was okay. I thought maybe we're used to Sky Sports' very high standard analysis. Similar, if you're new to cricket, they always are like Monday Night Football in their analysis, seemingly every ball. I've heard Jamie Carragher talk about how much he's inspired by the Sky Sports cricket team. So I didn't think that it was quite there for it from Channel 4. I didn't think the analysis was quite there. But Toby, what were your viewing? What, as a viewer, how did you enjoy? Did you not enjoy Channel 4 having the cricket? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think it's good to see it back on Channel 4. They did well, I'd say. It's quite different from the Sky commentary, who, yeah, you said, a lot more detailed in their analysis. But I think some of it is they have a lot more time to build their analysis and build their innings almost as a commentary team, because they commentate through the whole day. Whereas it was sort of with the Channel 4, I think they used sort of different commentary, different commentator in India. And then they sort of, it's just basically it's Alistair Cook and the presenter talking about cricket for a few hours between intervals, who I thought actually did really well. The two of them, I think Stravis is meant to come in for the next test. So I think it's great to see it back on Channel 4 and that everyone can see the cricket to be on free-to-air TV.
Yeah, and I'll admit, I got on my soapbox last week and talked for England about how important it was to be seen as England cricketers on Channel 4. And it went well, and always with a win in the morning, it's going to be news for the rest of the day. And Channel 4 highlights are available in the evening. So people who are stuck at home, as we all are, get to watch it. It's in their face for the first time, and hopefully we get a new generation. And it's perfect timing because it's just coming to the end of the winter. It will get kids a full summer of cricket, maybe a few adults coming back into the game, which we always want to see. So here at Sticky Wickets, we're trying to create a link between the University of Nottingham and Nottinghamshire cricket. So here is a clip from the Talk of the Trent podcast, sent to us very kindly by Nottinghamshire cricket, with Paul Franks, assistant coach, talking about his experience in the T10 Abu Dhabi League.
On campus.
And online.
Online.
This
is
URN.
Yeah, good, actually. Overcoming the challenges of, you know, global travel at the minute was interesting. You know, going through various tests and bits and bobs and getting the legalities in place to be able to travel. Quite novel, never had to do that before, and something we normally take for granted. Then we get into our residence, and then we have to do various other testing over our period of quarantine, and then we test to come out, and then we start training.
Now, we can't see you at the minute because we're back on the phone rather than on anything fancy in a Zoom way, but it didn't look like a bad place to quarantine. You seem to have a decent little vista out there.
Yeah, I think part of me is quite happy that you don't get to see it, because I might have got some hate mail. But I'm very lucky. I'm Team Abu Dhabi franchise, being the local team, is obviously pulling a few strings here, because we've maxed out on the accommodation front, and all the lads are certainly very happy in terms of where we're staying and how well we've been looked after. And I can't speak highly enough of how well they have looked after us as individuals. So yeah, it's a nice spot.
So how does your role fit in then? Now you've had a few days out there. Dougie Brown's head coach, isn't he? So where do you come in?
Yeah. Well, basically, I've known Dougie for quite a long time. Dougie and I share. We've shared jobs, if you like, at various times. We've been coaches of the local team, so we've both got knowledge of cricket in this part of the world, and how cricket's played in this part of the world. I've basically taken over looking after the bowling unit, which I suppose is a bit of a hospital pass in T10 cricket if you can get it. But yeah, I've got some excellent bowlers to work with from all parts of the world. Yes, we're all sort of mucking in to help each other out. So yeah, it's about getting the lads as well prepared as we can, for them to go and show off their skills in what is the shortest format of the game.
Yeah, what do you tell a bowling unit ahead of a T10? Because there's a lot of license to hit for the batsman, isn't there?
There is. Hopefully, to stay calm, not feel like they're, they're under too much pressure. They can turn a game any ball, any delivery, and make sure that they know that they have to be very clear when they're stood at the top of mark about what they're going to deliver. Try and set the field accordingly, and if you can at any point put the batsman under pressure by creating a dot. Then that's going to make a big difference over the course of the 10 overs. But yeah, you're right. It is almost a snapshot of white ball cricket. I'm certainly looking forward to see how the players react under pressure, and what skills they're able to show.
Yeah, and from an Outlaws point of view, it's mainly batsmen that are over there. Samit out there as well, of course. But at Team Abu Dhabi, you've got Ben Duckett and Joe Clark out there at the minute. How do you think it can benefit them, this exposure to the really shorter format?
Yeah, well, it will. They've obviously been exposed to this format based on the fact they're very, very good T20 players, and they've had stellar seasons. Joe's obviously scratched the surface of playing the Big Bash. Ben's been in and around other franchise leagues at different times, played some PSL. And they're very, very good players in their own right. They've got a fantastic guy to pick the brains of in Kumar Sangakkara, who's obviously played across all sorts of formats. So I'll be encouraging particularly Joe and Ben to be picking his brains about batting and test match batting as well, as much as short format batting, because who better to try and learn from than him. But yes, you're right. I think we've got a variety of players from the grandmaster himself in someone like Chris Gayle, through to someone like Kushal Mallah, who is 16 years of age, one of Nepal's bright young things of cricket. So it brings together a very diverse cricketing landscape, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they go out there and perform.
Have you been able to pick the brains of Kumar as well yet, as the mentor for the team?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we spent quite a lot of time together as a management group. Our main focus has been about getting the team prepped as well as we can, making sure they've hit plenty of balls, making sure the bowlers have got all the variations in place, and that the fielding's as sharp as it can be. So I think over the course of the next 10 or 12 days, I've sort of collared him and said, look, I'd love to pick your brains across all things cricket, not just T10, but like I say, how he sees the cricket landscape as things stand, and management and coaching within that, because I think I'd be missing an opportunity if I wasn't doing that. So yeah, I'm certainly going to grab him for a cup of tea or a beer at some point and pick his brains.
And it's kind of quick competition, isn't it? Like you say, it's all done within a week or so. Does that bring its own challenges for you as well?
You don't have much time to lick your wounds. You've got to get yourself ready and get on and get moving again. So yeah, and if you don't start well, it can sort of pass you by. I've looked at the history of previous competitions and done a little bit of work behind the scenes to try and find out what makes things work within this format that's different to T20 or from other forms of white ball cricket. So yeah, there's subtle differences and subtle changes that I hope we've managed to get them across to the playing group. Abu Dhabi and the Sheikh Zayed Stadium is quite a unique venue in terms of dimensions and the crosswinds that blow at different times of the day. So that can affect the game as such. But like I mentioned before, I think, with it being the shortest format of the game, you can literally turn the game on its head in the space of three or four balls. And and that's a big watcher for us. And if we get the opportunity to do that, then I'll be really impressed by how the batting group go about trying to seize that initiative, and how the bowling group go about trying to re-arrest that initiative if they are under pressure.
We're on campus and we're online.
And we're online.
University.
Radio.
Nottingham.
There you go. That was absolutely fascinating to hear his insight into the T20, T10, sorry, Abu Dhabi League. And let's use it as a springboard to talk about the T10 League. Marvellous tournament it is. It's so exciting. It's so different to anything, really. It's not the IPL. It's not the Big Bash. It stands as its own entity. Let's just look at some of the England players who really caught my eye, especially Jamie Overton. Took 12 wickets at tournament high, throwing his name back into the England mix, maybe. Tom Kohler Padmore went third on the tournament's leading run scorers, a name not been pitched around England too much, but if he can get big runs in this tournament, maybe there's a chance he might be thought of it in the India World Cup coming up soon. And you've got to respect that when Chris Gayle is in the tournament. To come third is always quite impressive. And Ben Duckett, Nottinghamshire lad, kept wicket very well indeed. There were also Chris Jordan at the tournament, who bowled very well, and someone who is often forgotten in the white ball series is is England's leading wicket taker, Chris Jordan. So all round very good for this. Toby, did you get a chance to watch?
Yeah, I saw a few highlights. I think the main one I saw was Chris Gayle's, I think it was 86 not out off 22, 25 balls. Something unbelievable. I mean, he only had one or two runs off the first couple balls as well, which is the worrying thing. And then he just went ballistic and blasted stuff everywhere. It was fantastic to see, really.
Yeah, and what I love about this league is the randomness of it. It does feel like international county cricket. It's got the names you recognise, the Samit Patels, your Luke Wrights, your Phil Salts, your Ravi. So really high standard England names like Dawid Malan, Fidel Edwards, Andre Russell, Chris Gayle, these like titans of sport. Then you also get players who you might not have seen before and from countries you don't really see a lot of. Ali Khan from America, Karan from Nepal, Ravi Singh from Canada. It's so important for these players to be playing at the highest level with those players I previously mentioned, Edwards, Russells, Gayles. Toby, how important is it for the global development of the game, especially in a white ball format, for these lesser countries, not lesser in a negative way, but these countries that don't quite have the players, these five-star players, to learn from Chris Gayle, really, and players like him of a similar ilk, so they can improve their game and improve the international game?
Yeah, no, it's huge for these smaller, in inverted commas, nations. They can struggle sometimes to really get the exposure to competitions like this, and it is fantastic to see some of these players from these countries getting an opportunity abroad and at a level that this competition gets to. You can't really imagine that many times you're going to get players from America or Canada or Nepal getting to bowl and bat against the likes of Chris Gayle, Andre Russell, Fidel Edwards, etc. like that, who are sort of pretty high caliber players and have very good international records. So it is good to see, and the more players like that who get an opportunity in competitions like this, the better cricket will be, and the higher caliber in general it will become. And so on to another white ball competition. We have the Big Bash has just finished. The Sydney Sixers topped the group and they topped the whole competition. It was fantastic, really. James Vince, the Hampshire lads from England, went over and scored 290s in successive matches to carry them over the win. You also had the likes of Dan Christian, our Notts player, really helping as well. And then a few of the Aussie lads, Josh Phillippe, as well as Daniel Hughes, who captained them with Moyes Enriquez as well. And then a few other international players. In the final, a 95 from James Vince off 60 balls really was the strongest innings from the Sixers, but was a lot of cameos around him. Enriquez got 18 off 11, Silk 17 off 11, Dan Christian 20 off 14. There's a lot of boys just hitting around him and just boosting the run rate as well. Pick of the bowlers, you had Jai Richardson got 2 for 45 and Andrew Tai, probably the best, 2 for 29, as well as Fawad Ahmed got 1 for 16 at an economy of 5.33, which is pretty impressive when you look at Vince's 158 strike rate as well as some of the other guys. Perth Scorchers tried to get theirs but couldn't quite. Cameron Bancroft and Liam Livingston got them off to a reasonable start. Livingston 45, another English player, and Bancroft 30 off 19. They then had a mini collapse, really struggling to sort of keep the run rate up there. And Aaron Hardy at the end, 26 off 13, just trying to keep them up, but they fell a few runs short. Pick of the bowlers, you had 3 for 37 from Ben Dwarshuis. Two wickets apiece for Dan Christian, Sean Abbott and Jackson Bird, all bowling very well. Bird in particular, 2 for 14 off his 3 overs at economy of 4.67. Dom, did you see much of the final? What did you think of the tournament as a whole as well?
I think if we look at the final, it shows how good England cricket is. In an Australian tournament, the man who took all the headlines is James Vince. James Vince, a man who, if we're honest, underperformed at the World Cup in the 50-over format, but if you get 95 in a Big Bash final, you are going to make headlines. And we're going to talk about some of the England players who have made a headline in the Big Bash. There's so many of them, it feels like. And it really shows how good England are getting at cricket across the board. But yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch the full game due to work and, let's be honest, feeling absolutely knackered after the Super Bowl. It's just gone really well for England. I'm very happy that James Vince got big scores. And let's be honest, the Sydney Sixers, if any team wears pink, all pink, best of luck to you, because that's a bold move.
That's so true. Yeah, very interestingly, when you look at the sort of top run scorers of the Big Bash, lots of them were English. You had Alex Hales topping the highest run scorers. I think then Philippi and Vince were close behind, and Liam Livingstone also scoring a few runs. But none of those three are actually in the England white ball setup currently, you could say. None of them really getting a starting spot. As well with some of the bowlers as well, Danny Briggs probably being the best English spin bowler there. Yeah, well, the best bowler possibly from England. I thought had a very strong tournament. Do you think this will really help some of their chances with the India World Cup around the corner, Dom?
Yeah, of course. The Big Bash is it's almost the La Liga of in T20 cricket. It's such a high standard. It's so different to English pitches. The standard's incredibly high. And for these lads to all dominate in their teams and Alex Hales to win the Golden Bat, well done. Nottingham Shalad, we're all very proud of him. It's so good, not only for the T20 game for England, but just say these lads don't make it into the England team over the summer. T20 cricket in this country is going to be absolutely amazing, because you're going to have Alex Hales going off against Derbyshire, which can only mean big things. Sorry, Derbyshire. But it's going to be so exciting. And I think we'll have a more in-depth talk about this closer to the start of the World Cup when England release their team. But these lads have all put in a very big notice. Even the lads who didn't go to there, the T10 lads, the Ben Ducketts, the Jamie Overtons, even Jake Ball, who didn't get a chance to make the list of batting, because he's a bowler. But he made his name very well known. It shows the depth in English cricket at the moment. And hopefully we can, dare I say it, win the World Cup coming soon. And it's showing how much runs we've got now. It's just, can we find the right team? Because Alex Hales, we talked about on previous podcasts, we're not sure if he can fit into the England team due to failed drug tests a few years ago. But yeah, it's really positive to see Vince, Livingstone and Hales getting big runs down under. We might even need them in the Ashes if worst comes to worst. James Vince might come back into the Test squad. Alex Hales probably won't come back into the Test squad. But when we tour back down there after the Ashes in a one-day series, you never know, he could come back, and that would be good for the whole of English cricket.
DJ! This is URN University Radio Nottingham.
But like we said at the top of the show, there has been a great few weeks for Test cricket. Pakistan beat South Africa in South Africa. Hassan Ali guided Pakistan to a 2-0 victory over Sri Lanka in the final test. This is the first time Pakistan had beaten South Africa in South Africa since 2003. To make you feel old, that is a year after I was born, and I'm now doing my uni degree. So, well to feel old. Thank you for listening. He was lethal, it's fair to say, with the new ball, and I think his five had just demonstrated the mastery of new ball bowling, and England should be a bit worried for when he comes over, because he could do some real damage on English surfaces coming up.
And then over to the West Indies. West Indies chase an incredible 395 against Bangladesh in what was a rollercoaster test match. It's unbelievable to see. Bangladesh started phenomenally with 103 from Hassan in the first innings and pinned West Indies to a measly 259 on a flat wicket. Bangladesh then smashed a solid 223 with Monimal getting 123 of those runs and then declaring, with West Indies needing heaps of runs to win, step up Kyle Mayers, whose 210 helped the West Indies chase a massive total. Well done to the young man. It could have been so different, as he was dropped on 49 and on 47. Bangladesh missed the chance to review an LBW, which would have been overturned and the umpire's original decision. West Indies lead the series 1-0 in a two-game series. Talking of leads, it's time for the URN Ashes. We have a new game this week, as usual. It's my turn to ask Dom this question after I managed to get last week's quiz with a bit of a Carlos Brathwaite-esque moment at the end, hitting two sixes.
Don't need to talk about that.
So this new game is An Idiot, A Stuart Abroad, which I came up with, and Dom, as usual, comes up with a fantastic name of it. So how this game works, I'm going to be reading out a few facts about cricketers, current cricketers from the 21st century. So I'll be reading five different stats. Each one relates to how this player bats in different conditions. So the first stat will always relate to their average and their either runs or wickets taken at their home country. Then the second one will be to do with the best average, so wherever they average highest or lowest if they're a bowler. And the third one will be most matches, so wherever they play most frequently away from home. Then I go on to their highest score and best figures and the total number of matches they've played in Test cricket. And then finally, I'm just going to read off their opening paragraph on Wikipedia to try and give Dom a few hints if he needs it by the end. So I have five different players here, and I think a good effort would be 15 to win it, I'd say, Dom, you know, averaging three for each player. You ready? Do you understand it?
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, let's go.
So the first player is an English batsman. He scored 4,348 runs, an average of 50.56 at home.
Okay, so he's English. He scored lots of runs. I'm going to go with Kevin Peterson.
Unfortunately, that's not right. Next, his highest average is in Sri Lanka. He scored 655 runs there at an average of 65.5.
Okay, I'm going to go Jonathan Trott.
It's not Jonathan Trott, unfortunately. Number three, in Australia, he's played 9 test matches there, scored 570 runs at 38.
Joe Root?
It is Joe Root, yes. Well done. The next question would have probably given it away. He scored a high score of 254 against Pakistan and has just played his 100th test match.
Yeah, take that. Take that.
So that's 3 runs from his first question. Number two, this Australian bowler has 127 wickets at 24.72 in his home conditions.
Okay, my first thought was Mitchell Johnson, but he could only really bowl on his surface. That's an unpopular opinion, but it's a fact. I'm going to go Ryan Harris, who used to look like my under-15s coach. Sorry, Mr. Meadows, if you're still listening.
That would be an interesting callback if you get a message in the next couple of weeks. unfortunately, it's not Ryan Harris. Number two, his highest average as a bowler, he's taken 12 wickets in the West Indies at 8.83.
Is it Cummins?
It's not Pat Cummins, no, unfortunately. But he's played most away from home in England, taking 36 wickets at 23.58.
Okay, who got... Well, didn't Cummins get the bowler? He got the most wickets last tournament. So is it Peter Siddle?
It's not Peter Siddle, unfortunately. I know how much you love him. And I thought, oh, could I? But unfortunately, no. His best figures are 6 for 67 against India and has played 55 test matches.
Is it Mitchell Starc?
It's not Mitchell Starc, unfortunately. This player was born on the 8th of January in 1991. So he's 30 years old. He's an Australian international cricketer. He's a tall pace bowler known for his accuracy and has been compared to former Australian paceman Glenn McGrath.
He can move the ball about. It's not Siddle. It's not Johnson. It's not Cummins. There's one left. It's not Bancroft. Who is it?
He's very tall. Not the quickest, but hits the bat about 85 miles an hour, I'd say.
Genuinely can't think of anyone else but Cummins and... Oh no, this is bad.
You'll be kicking yourself, I think, when I tell you it.
I don't know. I'm going to go Paul Rifle.
It's not Paul Rifle, it's Josh Hazlewood.
Oh.
So unfortunately, you have failed to score a run on that one. Dot ball there. So... on to player number three. This South African batsman scored 297 runs at 46.5 currently in South Africa right now.
Is it De Kock?
It's not Quinton De Kock, unfortunately, no. His best average is away from home. Sorry, no. Yes, his best average, sorry, away from home is in Bangladesh, where he scored 75 runs at an average of 75.
Jesus.
Not the most useful clue.
He's still playing?
He is still playing, yes.
De Villiers?
It's not De Villiers, no. Number three, in India, he has played the most matches away from home. He scored 369 runs at an average of 30.75.
Oh, bloody hell. So he's not that good. Who is it?
He's a current South African top order batsman.
Du Plessis?
It's not Du Plessis, unfortunately, no. His high score was against Bangladesh at home, 199, and he's played 67 test matches for South Africa.
Oh, this is bad. Is it Amla?
It's not Hashim Amla, no, unfortunately. And then finally, this player, 33-year-old, is a South African cricketer who plays tests and ODIs, is a former test captain. He's left-handed opening batsman and a slow left-arm bowler. And I'll also tell you, he's come over to Surrey for a few years now and helped as well, occasionally batting a bit lower, though.
Oh, this is so annoying. Graham Smith.
It's not Graham Smith. It's Dean Elgar, actually.
Oh,
it's a bit tougher than I thought this one than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's a lot tougher.
Okay. Hopefully, this one is a bit easier. This next one. This current West Indian bowler has taken 133 wickets at 22.14 at home.
Jason Holder.
It's not Jason Holder, unfortunately. No. You now need to get this one and the next one to be level. So you get this one here, second go, and you need to get the next one first time, which is going to be tricky. I'll move on here. Okay, so because the next question would have been to do with Zimbabwe, which wouldn't have helped very much. So the most matches he's played against another country is in England. He's taken 27 wickets at 33.11. Current West Indian quick bowler.
I can't think of anyone. Is it? He was the bloke who did the salute. Is it Samuels? Was it Samuels? No, he's a spinner though, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh. More of a batsman as well.
Who run, mate?
He's also a batsman. Yeah.
See, this is my thing. Is I'm rubbish with names, so I get to know a player over a summer when England play them, and then they just fade into existence until need to know them again.
We would have played him last time when the West Indies came over here in the summer. It was him. He sort of leads the attack. He's a bit of a sort of Jimmy Anderson-esque bowler, they say.
Jermaine Blackwood?
It's not Jermaine Blackwood. He's another batsman, unfortunately.
Oh, why they've got so many batsmen? Team.
Do you want his Wikipedia page? It may.
I'm not gonna help. But... yeah, why not? Why not?
So this player is 32-year-old quick bowler, Barbadian international cricketer who plays the West Indies. He played in the 2006 Under-19 Cricket World Cup in Sri Lanka and has represented the West Indies in Tests and One Day International Cricket.
Is it, this is a very off chance, but is it head of URN Sport, James Aldred? Thanks for listening, James. Thanks for listening.
It is actually James Aldred. He's got it. I think just for that out of the blue guess, we might have to give you a no ball on that one.
We all think he's organising and editing, but no, he's actually playing for the West Indies.
So yeah, as Kemar Roach was the bowler.
Of course it was Kemar Roach. Oh, these are basic fundamentals.
It was a tough one, that. Okay, and then we'll go on to the final one. I think if you hit this one, this first one, for six, back over my head, I think it'll be no ball. It'll be free hit. You can do what you want.
It's fine. It's fine. You've got to accept losses. You've got to accept losses. As someone who went to a school where I was the only player who played cricket, I know how to lose. And yeah, I'm getting used to this feeling now.
Okay, so player number five. This New Zealand international has taken 189 wickets at 26.89 at home.
Trent Bolt.
It's not Trent Bolt, unfortunately. It's opening bowler partner. Number two, Sri Lanka. He has his best average of 15.47, taking 19 wickets there.
Lockie Ferguson?
It's not Lockie Ferguson, unfortunately.
Out of New Zealanders, quick now.
Number three, he's played most tests away from home in Australia, taking 28 wickets at 40.
Like I said, I'm running out. So who bowls with Trent Bolt? Oh, he's the only name coming to mind is now Colin de Grandhomme, and I know it's not him.
he's been around for a while. He's sort of always reminds me a bit of Stuart Broad, the way he bowls. Bit of occasional in the white ball side, but mainly test matches.
I don't know. I don't know any more New Zealanders. Is it Taika Waititi from the Thor films? Is it him? Because he's the only other New Zealander I can think of at the moment.
I can allow you it, because actually Korg, who he voices, who steams in and bowls rockets.
Lovely bit of rock banter.
Should I just tell you then, Dom, finish it off?
Yeah, come on.
It is Tim Southee.
Oh, the beautiful Tim Southee. Oh, no. Of course it's Tim Southee. I'd like to make a public apology to the listeners. You deserve a higher standard of quizzing from me. As Toby goes 3-1 up in the series, it's fair to say I've let myself down, I've let URN down, I've let Nottinghamshire down, and I'd just like to apologise. I'm very sorry.
I think it's okay. I think people will, they might struggle to get over it at first, but I think the public will be strong behind you, Dom, don't worry. And I guess that is the end of the podcast for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening. Dom, thank you for joining me again, as usual.
I'd like to apologise once more to the listener. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry, James, Aldred, I've let you down as well. I let April down on my other podcast, URN Touchdown. Give it a listen. But apart from that, I've let everyone down. But yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry again. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking for your forward to a text next week saying, I've got a game, but I need a name. So
I feel like you get bonus points if you can come up with a name within 5 seconds, like you did this week.
Yeah, I think if any listeners got a game and they'd like to send it in that we can both play, we'd love that. And thanks for having us on.
Yeah, cheers. Actually, yeah, on that point, if we do have any listeners, we might not, if you do, yeah, want to get in touch, maybe you guys could sort of ask, you could create your own quiz and come on the podcast and quiz the two of us, a bit like Matching did at Tail Enders. We could both get our answers in.
Yeah, and we've got a special diversity podcast coming out soon, I think the whole of URN Sport are coming up with their own ones for different sports, so look forward to ours. We will also be covering the rest of the India and England test match. But as Toby was saying, it's time for us to leave. Thank you so much for listening, and go well, Toby.
Cheers, mate.
Is URN.
He's got it! England won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
This is URN.